Enchanted Sky Media. Media.
This is Code 3, the podcast for firefighters. Now, here's your host, Scott Orr.
Thanks for being with me on this week's edition of Code 3. Today we're talking dispatching with Barry Fury. He's got 45 years of experience running and designing peace apps, and Barry's also been a fire service officer in 3 states. He's now a consultant and an author on emergency communication topics. And Barry Fury joins me now from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello, Barry.
Good morning. How are you, Scott?
Doing well, thanks. So let's start with NextGen 911. What is it?
Well, NextGen 911, which is short for Next Generation 911, is a wholesale replacement of our country's current emergency number infrastructure. And by that, I'm not talking just a partial upgrade. I'm talking about a wholesale replacement of equipment within the 911 centers, as well as the networks that connect these centers together.
So how far off is all this realistically?
I think it depends on who you talk to, Scott, quite frankly. Some of the aspects of next-gen 911 and some of the technology is already out there and has already been installed. I think to find out where we're going, we kind of have to take a step back and look at where we've been. When people talk about this is not your grandfather's this or this is not your grandfather's that, I think it's important to remember that our current 911 system is exactly our grandfather's 911. It was established in 1968 and obviously based upon analog technology. If anyone around recalls what a phone was back in 1968, most of them had rotary dials and were hardwired. They couldn't do much besides make what we understood to be a telephone call. Now, with all of the technology that's out there in the hands of the citizen and in the hands of the consumer, telephones or communications devices, which is probably a better name, can do quite a bit more. And so there are options under Next Generation 911, for example, that support text to 911, that support photographs to 911, that support streaming video to 911, all of which have some import to first responders. The portions that have already begun to install support the text to 911 option.
So you got text, which makes sense, video, images, and all that. Does a PSAP really need all that information?
That's a really good question. But I think what we have to take a look at is what is the expectation of the citizen in today's society. Most people are comfortable with texting their friends, and also with using those other technologies that we talked about, sending videos and sending still photos. There's been a great amount of questioning from the public in terms of, hey, if I can do these things with my friends, why can't I do them during an emergency? And I think from the public safety and fire aspect, some of those technologies do have some value. Obviously, the deaf and hard of hearing community are in need of the text to 911 feature. But in terms of the still photos and videos, looking at it from the fire service perspective, for example, perhaps a citizen takes a photo of the placard on the side of a vehicle carrying hazardous materials that's involved in an incident, that can be sent directly to the 911 center. And with the meshing of radio and telephone technology, this can be rebroadcast out to the first responders. The same can be said of any pre-arrival video. If a caller includes a live stream of a fire, for example, that could be broadcast live to the cabs of every piece of apparatus that's en route to the call. So, I mean, certainly there are some intrinsic benefits to 911 and especially the first responders to implement this technology.
Do you foresee a day in which the dispatcher or the call taker might say, hey, can you send me a photo? Is that the sort of thing that we could look forward to?
I think we can look forward to a lot of things that we don't even know we're going to be looking forward to. As you indicated, I've been in this business for a long, long time. And the increase in technology in the past 10 to 15 years certainly has outpaced the growth in technology during my first 25 and 30 years in this industry. So I don't know that we even know what the next technology is going to be and how that can support our mission. One of the things that I think we can look forward to, obviously, is the integration of so-called smart cars and smart highways, where crash information is routinely automatically sent to 911 that would let the paramedics responding automatically know the number of occupants of the vehicle and the mechanics of the accident. That technology is out there already. I see a time in the future, for example, that is automatically and universally included across the country.
So it sounds like it would be very helpful, but the obvious question is it also sounds like it's going to cost a fortune to implement the infrastructure. Who's going to pay for all this?
Well, that's always a good question, Scott. We can take a look at the FirstNet initiative, which looks at creating an interoperable nationwide public safety radio communications network. The federal government initially budgeted $7 million for the upstart, but I've seen estimates that run to $100 billion and more for accomplishing this. If you take a look, you'll find that nationwide it's estimated there are about 6,600 or some number close to that 911 or comm centers out there. Obviously, equipment would have to be upgraded and in most cases replaced at all of these facilities, not to mention all of the equipment that would need to be replaced by the vendors and carriers themselves that would get the 911 call from the citizen to public safety. Some of this is obviously going to be a public funded operation. Part of it will also be a carrier or a provider based funded piece of the puzzle. So again, we are at a point where we have band-aided together all of the increases in technology onto the original analog backbone of the 911 system. And because of that, there are definitely some shortcomings and mismatches along the way. It's a big job, but at some point it's going to have to be done.
Now, it sounds like from your description, we are roughly in the same point with 911 as we were with the radio systems in, say, 2000, 2001, where they were sort of cobbled together, but they weren't really compatible. Is that a fair assessment?
I think it's a fair assessment, and in some cases, Scott, I think it may actually be worse. Consider what the state of the art was back in 1968 when the current 911 system implemented. I'm sure there are probably a few of your listeners that still have some equipment and service from 1968, perhaps an old engine here and there. But most of the fire service technology, I dare say, that was around in 1968, including duck coats and three-quarter boots and the like, have gone the way of the history books. Are radio compatibility issues in many cases were caused by some divergence in technologies along the way. The issues here with the 911 system really boil down to age and the incompatibility of features that have been added along the way. You've gone from a basic analog 911 fixed landline type of phone system to one that has added VoIP and wireless telephony over the top. So rather than attempt to make any more fixes, it's certainly going to make sense in the long run to do it all over. And do it right. And in fact, I think the age of the equipment is certainly also a factor that's got to be considered in that process.
Yeah, and worth asking here, I think, is do you believe that we can come up with 911 PSAPs that will be expandable for the future instead of growing the way they have? Or do you think we're just stuck with doing what we can do and then upgrading if and when the technology changes?
Well, although technology and funding are certainly big issues, the biggest concern to me, having been in this business for as long as I have, is the political solution. You can get anything to work if you put enough technology and enough money to it. But there has to be a will by all those involved to make it work. And let me define that a little bit further. Number one, with regard to the funding side, the FCC has recently really taken notice of what's happened over the last decades with 911 funds in many states. And again, many of the listeners will be familiar with a surcharge or tax or whatever it happens to be in a particular state on their telephone bill that's supposed to be set aside to fund the operation and upgrade of 911. There have been several stories lately, and one can easily Google the topic, where states have been called to task for consistently raiding their 911 funds for millions of dollars and diverting those funds elsewhere. So going back to an earlier question that you had, Scott, I don't think that funding by itself would necessarily have completely funded the next generation 911 initiative. But certainly nationwide, there are hundreds of millions, if not, I haven't done the math, potentially $1 billion or more of 911 funds across the country that over the years have been taken from their primary cause and applied to other governmental project shortfalls. The second thing is that many states have taken an aggressive approach to limit the number of PSAPs, or public safety answering points, within their boundaries. Some have gone down so far as to create a single statewide 911 center. So if there is a political will there to design this architecture and design this response system into something that is manageable, we can do it. If there isn't, we can't.
It's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out. Barry Fury, thanks for being on Code 3 with me this week.
Scott, my pleasure.
All right. And Barry can be reached at Barry Fury Consulting at barryfury.com. That's BarryFury.com. Or call 919-373-9911. That's all for this week. I'll see you again next week.
Code 3 is a production of Enchanted Sky Media. To get in contact with us, visit code3podcast.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, you should. Don't miss an episode. Find us at the Apple iTunes Store, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.